Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello there, welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. I'm Enda Call, in case you've forgotten who I am. I was busy off doing some PR for Liam Scales over the last couple of weeks, so I haven't been able to do the show. Busy times being the PR man for the best left back, left centre back in the SPFL right now. So as you can imagine, I haven't been able to do the Huddle Breakdown for a couple of weeks, but I was replaced by Duco James. Hello.
Hello, hello. Hi, how are you doing?
And by Alan Morrison as well. The two guys have had an almighty pay rise over the last couple of weeks, taking over on the hosting and co-hosting duties. So,
Hey, don't forget production and post-production that you've dumped on me
that's,
too. So.
That's true. So don't feel too sorry for them. They have been paid well for their duties over the last number of weeks. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about the Livingston away. 3-0 Celtic were victors against Livingston in the Tony Macaroni Arena. We're going to be talking about some contract movement. It looks like Rio Hatate is due to sign a new contract with Celtic, as was the case for several mainstays at Celtic so far this season. And we're going to be looking at the momentum that Celtic seem to be starting to build now, with some nice little patterns of play finally appearing. It seems to be that Brendan Rodgers had a plan all along, and it is starting to reveal itself as the season really gets started. So that's all coming up on today's show. Today is a live stream, a rare live stream. I haven't done one in a while. So if you are watching on YouTube, do feel free to get involved in the comments below, and we'll try to get to some of these as normal, or as was the case when we used to do the live streams all the time. Alan, I want to kick it off with a little theory that I had, and something I got in trouble for at the weekend was twinning that Dyson Maeda was a terrible footballer. Now, it just so happened that this tweet went out roughly about 2 minutes before he did a little Cruyff turn and then banged one into the top corner with his bad foot. So ill-timed, we'll say. Ill-timed was my comments about Dyson Maeda. But I want to clarify something. There is a difference between me saying he's a bad player and me saying he's a bad footballer. So here's my theory. I have a theory that you can be a really good player, really valuable to the team, a valuable teammate. You can contribute to the team as a good player, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're a good footballer. So if you want me to continue on, I would say good footballers that played for Celtic, you know, you've got your Lubos, you've got your Kenny Dalglish, you've got Tom Rodgick in more recent memory, Aidan McGeady, perhaps you could throw in there too. Technical players, players who can pass the ball, move the ball, dribble, you know, they're comfortable on the ball. Dyson Maeda is not that, but that does not mean he's a bad player. So I think that's where I was aiming that tweet. And I don't know if you agree with me there.
Oh, you want me to help you overhaul? Is that what you're saying?
I want you to tell me why I was right about saying Maeda was a bad football player. Footballer. Not a bad player.
So listen, footballer. Listen, football is a game of many facets, and actually 90% of football is what you do off the ball, because a player is on the ball for probably a minute, 30 seconds, 90 seconds, maybe significantly less than that in a match, right? So, you know, and this is the a reminder really about the limitations of data. Let's be open about that, is that we tend to capture on ball actions. And actions, as I say, you're talking about fractions of the time players on the pitch without tracking data which is, you know, voluminous and expensive, tracking every run off the ball, tracking positioning, that which is what footballers spend the vast majority of the game doing, being off the ball. You can't get a picture of a complete performance. So when we talk about, you know, footballing performance, we should be talking about what they do off the ball, and less so what they do on the ball, because it forms such a small part of their performance. So there you go. So the thing with Maeda is he's a player who, firstly, has been repurposed as a kind of left winger, nominally, or left-sided forward, when really he's always been a striker. So that's the first thing to consider. Second thing I'd say is that he's ahead of Kyogo in the pecking order to be a striker at an international level. And thirdly is that, you know, he is a player who, if you look at his data, the closest approximation to a player at Celtic, you listed a lot of names there, but the one I would say he's most similar to, and I'll explain why, is probably Jeremy Frimpong. And the reason for that is that Maeda has got specific skills in a very specific aspect of the game that are probably elite in world football. And many of the other aspects of his game are ordinary, probably. For those that maybe can't remember Frimpong, it wasn't that long ago, but Jeremy Frimpong was a player that Manchester City, frankly, didn't know what to do with. They tried him as a fullback, they tried him as a winger, etc. Tried him as a forward. He couldn't score. He didn't really create much. But he was incredibly fast. He was very small, low centre of gravity, and he could run with the ball at tremendous pace. And that was his super strength. And that single super strength was enough to get him a very lucrative move to Leverkusen. And if rumours are to be believed, you know, the biggest clubs in Europe were looking at him as a ball carrier, essentially. Now, ball carrying is actually not something that happens very often in football. If you look at, let's go back to pack passing, so pack passing, forward passes, Celtic might play 70 of those in a match. In terms of pack dribbles, so this is dribbling past people, you'd probably be more like 7 or 8. So it's like a tenth of the volume. So running with the ball is actually quite a niche skill in the context. And that's a niche skill within on-ball actions, which are a fraction of what a player does. So we come back to that point. So let's come back to Maeda then. What is Maeda's super strength? Well, Maeda's super strength, given his position, since he's been positioned in this left-forward role, is obviously his pressing and counter-pressing ability, which, you know, if you just, let's take a snapshot of the game on the weekend. Maeda completed 30 presses. This is where he's sprinting to close down the opposition. He completed 33 of those. The next highest is like 20. And this is a pattern that we've seen throughout the season. I think he's averaging over 23 presses per game. I've looked back over the data for pressing since it was available. And, you know, the only person who comes close to that really is Ryan Christie. In terms of pressing intensity. So you've got pressing, you also got counter-pressing. So counter-pressing is pressing immediately after you've lost the ball, so slightly different nuance. You tend to get like 6 or 7 or 8 of those a game, and he tends to be the one that has the most, again, but not by much. So he has this super strength. On the other side of the coin, in terms of your on-ball actions, technical ability, if you're assessing a forward, a wide attacker, you're going to be looking at their expected goals, expected assists, if you wanted to really simplify it and boil it down. So if I told you that last season, if you combine those two things, which is expected goals plus expected assists equals expected scoring contribution, expected scoring contribution from Maeda last season was 0.55 per game. So that means that he would be expected to create around about half a goal or an assist per game. To put that into context, in no particular order, you'd had Kyogo at 0.9, Jota at 0.8, Haksabanovic at 0.78, Abada at 1.14, don't forget that, and Giakoumakis was at 1.2, mainly because he came on as a sub late in game. So the point being here is that Maeda's nowhere near his peers as regards creating chances and getting on the end of chances. So what you've got is you've got somebody who is superb without the ball, who closes down the opposition. He's almost dribble resistant. What I mean by that is you can't get past him if you've got the ball. You have to pass around him. And but on the ball, he's, you know, probably half as effective as an Abada or a Jota, etc. So, you know, does that support your kind of position that he's not a particularly technically skilled footballer, but he does a lot of jobs off the ball to an elite level, and that is the package with Maeda.
Well, that's why he's a professional footballer, and that's why he starts for Celtic, because as Brendan Rodgers says, when you go down to 10 men, it's almost like you're not down to 10 men because of the amount of work he does off the ball. And it's also one of the reasons why I will also hold my hands up to those who are at the stadium watching the games as opposed to watching on TV, because you get a view of the match that you don't get on TV with watching individual players. You see their movement, you see what they're doing off the ball, you kind of understand why they're in certain positions, whereas that's much more difficult to do when you're watching it on a feed that, you know, is coming from the Tony Macaroni Arena. It's not ideal viewing. So I do think, as I said, I don't think he's a good footballer, but I do think he is a good player. I do think he contributes to the team. James, would you go along with that? I mean, like, the issue I have with a player like Maeda is that it's all well and good in the Champions League and things like that, where you genuinely see the actual bones and the good value of having someone who's so elite at counter-pressing as Maeda is. But the issue is when you're coming up against Scottish sides who mainly park the bus against you, that's where you need more quality on the ball as opposed to off the ball.
I'm generally in agreement, particularly with him as Alan said at wing. I think there's you know, some limitations there. The one thing I will say from an analytics perspective, and I don't think it's a great analogy, but I'm going to use it anyway, because the sports are different, but to a material degree. But there was some analytics done on, and I've mentioned this in the past, if you watch the Last Dance about the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan from the 90s, that great team, their offensive efficiency actually went up on the last three championships when Dennis Rodman was signed. And Dennis Rodman was kind of a basketball version of Maeda, meaning that he almost, you know, he wasn't very good offensively or shooting, but he was kind of a maniac defensively and rebounding. And it's counterintuitive that somebody who does almost nothing offensively would improve your offense, but you know, that can in basketball it helps with transition baskets, fast breaks because of defensive deflections and steals, not dissimilar in football with pressing and counter pressing. I think that the issue with Maeda, to your point, Enda, is that his usage in that regard domestically is so limited. And I think that there's a mental accounting of that, meaning that he, you know, we talk about this relative to Hatate's brilliant creative actions, kind of leaves an impression that might be disproportionate to his kind of overall production. And I think Maeda's effort and, you know, when he does those incredible tracking back that, you know, almost no one else does or can do, that leaves that impression that we probably, and I'm amongst those people, I mean, we mentally overvalue those relative to probably the totality of what he offers. So yeah, I actually wrote something a couple of weeks on this. This is before Abada got hurt, which was that, you know, domestically, I actually saw him as probably a backup striker is kind of the ideal role. I mean, that with him and because we didn't sign another striker in the window, that his best role might be is, you know, kind of a 1A with Kyogo at striker. So with Abada out, I think it's a lot more complicated because we haven't really seen enough creative reliability from a Yang. We don't really know about Palma yet. He's a fascinating player. I you know, we have so many of these kind of idiosyncratic, fascinating players at the moment, like Abada, where they're so good in certain aspects and so glaringly poor in others.
Yeah. An enigma, as he is described in the comments, which is completely true because, again, like I said, he technically he's not very gifted, but then he pulls out that worldy of a goal. He is capable of doing it every now and again, but you're not going to rely on him to do it all the time, which I think is the key point. But and in terms of this 3-0 win, Alan, this was a very impressive win from Celtic, if not flawed in many ways at the same time, not least the continuation of the red cards coming Celtic's way. But interesting that when we were talking in the pre-production chat that you picked out Greg Taylor as the player that you found most interesting in this game. Now, Greg Taylor has not been good this season, being frank. It just doesn't seem to be clicking for him. But at least in the first half of this game, he was a creative outlet for Celtic, which is something that we saw from Kieran Tierney playing the role that Brendan Rodgers had him in. So, I mean, what could it be the case that Greg Taylor was just adjusting to being an out-and-out fullback again as opposed to an inverted?
So I'll admit that I've probably not helped in terms of contributing to the view that Greg Taylor's start to the season has not been great. So I actually dug into that, really. I did a piece which will appear later in the week, looking into that exact question of Taylor's form. And what I found was, let's start with the game at the weekend. First of all, great thanks to David Martindale for, if he was off form, for basically playing Greg Taylor back into form again by giving him the complete freedom of the left-hand side of the park, him and McGregor, actually. It was a remarkable way that, so James often talks about his worry at teams that set up with a 4-4-2 diamond. This was a variation on that theme, but they just left so much space out wide. It was ridiculous. And Greg Taylor was able to come inside. And I think, as James has explained previously, in his youth days, Taylor was actually a central midfielder. And one of the reasons he can adjust to the inverted role is he's perfectly comfortable and used to playing in that position and being in that part of the field. So, he just absolutely dominated the ball to a ridiculous extent. I think he had something like 30 more completed passes than any other player. He had something like 10 more pack passes than any other player. The most notable of which was the ball through to Hitati that generated the penalty, where he took out most of the Livingston team with one through ball. But he was given just ridiculous amounts of time and space to do that. I don't know what Martindale was trying to do, but letting Taylor and McGregor run the game, I suspect, wasn't what he intended. So that was great to see Taylor on the ball and making an impact on the game on the ball. And the reason that I have sort of emphasised that is that if you look at his performances this season and look at the data, and you tend to break player performance down into sort of four components: defending, ball progression, creativity, and goal threat, very simplistically. And if you look at Taylor this season, his data is well down on the first sort of three of those, really, in terms of his back passing is down, his number of expected assists, his chances he's creating is well down as well. He's not getting in the box as often. He's not putting as many balls into the box. He's not putting many balls into dangerous areas. And he's giving the ball away a bit more, which is something I'd noticed. I mean, apart from the Feyenoord game, where Celtic obviously didn't have as much possession, and I think he gave away 8 passes. In every other game this season, he's in double figures for misplaced passes. Now, Greg Taylor has this issue, and actually him and Hitati have the same issue. If you notice, the first 10 to 20 minutes of a game, they give the ball away a disproportionate amount of times, and then they settle down. And it's incredibly both very similar in that regard. After, it's not uncommon for them both to be 50-50, passes complete, incomplete after about 15 minutes, and then they settle down and the passes sort of start to complete. And that sort of stresses less well, the better standard of the opposition, obviously. But to come back to Taylor then, what I did find also with Taylor is that his defensive numbers have actually improved quite dramatically this season, and so if you think about perception, what are we as Celtic fans, how is our perception going to be driven in terms of, you know, player performance? It's probably going to be heavily influenced by what people do on the ball, and especially attacking, because Celtic are dominating most games. So when you see a player who's getting, you know, less touches in the box, creating less chances, you know, expected assists are down, etc., you know, you sort of think, oh, they're not having a good season. And you know, packing's a bit mixed. His passing's down, but his receiving is up. So that suggests that off the ball, you know, his movement's good, he's getting into good positions, he's finding ways to kind of get on the ball. He is turning it over more, which again is something that we tend to draw attention to in our eyes, really. So all of that being said then, but what has improved, as I say, is his defensive contribution. You know, his volume of defensive activity, but also his defensive efficiency. That I measure that by defensive action success and possessions won through defensive actions. Bit of a mouthful, but they tend to measure the quality of the defending, and all those things are up. So now, context: is it because, you know, Celtic have, however many games Celtic have played this season, 8 games, is it? 2 of them have been, you know, down to 9 players. Has he had to do more defending? Is it just a function of that? Has his role changed? Is he asked to be being asked to play more of a traditional fullback role? If you look at his heat map, there certainly isn't the. If you look at his heat map last season, you'll see the red zone come into the middle of the opposition half, as in he's getting on the ball in a sort of traditional central midfielder's type role. This season, there's less of that, and also he's not getting as forward as much. So there's a little bit of maybe his role slightly changed, and therefore his defensive contribution has gone up because that's what he's been asked to do. And or maybe it's because he's actually improved a little bit in that regard as well. He's more mature. Defenders tend to sort of, you know, get better as they get older in that sense. So, yeah, definitely not as good on the ball. Livingston game was a great opportunity for him to showcase his talents when he's given time on the ball, and he was fantastic, and he virtually ran the game. And also, other thing noteworthy I'll say about his performance on the weekend is that when Celtic went down to, I know we're going to get on to the sort of Rodgers a little bit, but when Celtic went down to 10 players, and Rodgers very calmly, very immediately told Colin McGregor what he wanted, Greg Taylor actually shifted slightly inside and didn't actually change his position to what he had been when Celtic had 10 men. So it effectively meant that Celtic were playing a 3-4-2. So although in transition it looked a little bit like a 4-3-2, it was actually more of a 3-4-2. Johnson just switched around a little, Taylor tucked in a little bit in midfield. And I think that meant that Celtic never lost a grip of the midfield, and they also had that extra spare man in the wide midfield area. So that was very smart from Rodgers, but Taylor's capable of doing that. So I think that was, you know, credit to him for adjusting to that role. So this is one of the reasons I do Celtic by numbers is, you know, there's a perception of a player, oh, he's rubbish or he's brilliant. The reality is usually somewhere in the middle. And with Greg Taylor, it's definitely the case.
I definitely noticed the giving the ball away. I think that's the most jarring, and probably why the perception of Greg Taylor playing so badly this year is there, is that last year he was so safe in possession. His passing, I think he had one of the highest possession retention rates with his passings last year. You could always rely on him to make the right to take the right option. And this year, it just seems like he's giving the ball away more and more and more. And that's what these are definitely the things that fans notice. In terms of his defensiveness or his defensive improvements, I'm a little bit surprised to hear that, James, because if you look at where Celtic are having the issues, it's still sort of like it seems a little bit like Liam Scales has been cleaning up after Greg Taylor at times, but maybe that's just the way that Celtic are playing, that it's, you know, balls are still coming up over the top of the defense down the left hand side because Greg Taylor's forward a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's an example of a limitation of defensive statistics as far as event data goes. Because, you know, if a center back or a fullback allows an attacking player to get in behind because of poor positioning, you know, that's not going to get picked up directly. So yeah, I think there's some of that. But yeah, I agree with Alan as far as his on-ball defending has been pretty good. I think that the issue with we'll call it vomiting up the ball, because it seems to have become an epidemic, is, you know, it's probably some combination of the chopping and changing in the team, which is a lot of been driven by injuries, relative lack of quality in some of those players and what they're being asked to do, probably ill-suited for some of the roles that they're going to play at Celtic. And just adopting a new way of playing and, you know, positionally probably being asked to do some different things. So, you know, it became, we've talked about this in the past, it became such a muscle memory thing and patterns of play that to switch all that up, you're just not going to be as fluid, understandably, at the beginning of that transition period. So I think that we throw all that together, and we've been a bit of a mess on the ball as a team. And I think it's easy to pick any of these players out. I mean, even Cal McGregor's been not real great in that regard, and that's something that's obviously been a huge strength of his over time. So, you know, when someone like him is having an issue with it, I think the fact that Taylor is speaks to that as well. You know, I think we've talked about this over and over. I mean, the big issue with him is the athletic part, and, you know, a game like the weekend is just not going to tax him in that regard. And as Alan said, Mr. Martindale made that even easier, and not, you know, putting anybody on him to try and force that issue. So yeah, I, as long as he's put in the right position, and when I say right position, I mean that the role that he's being asked to play highlights some of his positives. You know, there's no problem with him at the SPFL level. And I don't expect that to be other than, you know, maybe theoretically against Rangers, which, again, they've been such a basket case that hasn't been an issue.
I think we'll talk about this player later on the podcast when we're talking about the quality of Celtic's play and the improvements. But Frank Brennan says that O'Reilly still isn't consistent enough, still doesn't score enough goals, and also gives away avoidable silly free kicks from outside the penalty area that lead directly to goals by you-know-who and Feyenoord. Well, what I would say is that Matt O'Reilly is the league's top goal scorer and was the highest contributor to goals for Celtic last season as well. So I would, I'd say that's nonsense, to be honest, that Matt O'Reilly doesn't contribute enough to goals in terms of playing for Celtic so far. Because, again, he got on the score sheet at the weekend. And, again, it was a really good performance from Matt O'Reilly, in my opinion. But we'll move to a different midfielder, and that is Rio Hatate, because it looks like he's going to be signing a new deal after a bit of filibustering, it has to be said, that, you know, it seems that these talks have taken a little bit longer than maybe Brendan Rodgers and Celtic would have liked. But it has been widely reported that he's due to sign a new contract now, and that brings the new contracts to Kyogo, Abada, Maeda, McGregor, Ralston signed one, and Stephen Welsh as well. So that's an exceptional bit of business from Celtic over the course of the summer and the course of the season as well, in terms of getting those new contracts. And James, we'll talk about Tate specifically in a second, but in terms of what this does for Celtic, is this is essentially just building for the future. This is, okay, we're getting our higher earners on higher contracts that will allow us to spend more money on wages in the future and hopefully attract some new names without, you know, tarnishing our wage structure altogether. And also it protects the assets like Abada.
Yeah, I wish I had a better appreciation for what's going on. Cause it, as far, I mean, I get that relative to somebody like, Kyogo or Callum McGregor, who, you know, based on their ages and their role at the club, they're kind of capstone players that you're looking to probably keep for the next 2-3 seasons at least. When you start doing it with players like Abada and, Hatate, the question falls back to the issue I've talked about endlessly, which is where is the coherent, proactive player trading model? And to me, these kind of contracts for Abada and Hatate, I think, you know, we don't know all the details, obviously, of the contracts, but from what I've read, they were both on very long-term deals already.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So it almost seems like their improved terms would be to try and get them to stay longer, which, you know, again, to me is against the idea of the player trading model. So, you know, if you already have somebody on a 4-year deal, I'm not sure why, you know, if the idea is most likely they're going to move on within the next 12 to 18 months, why, you know, there's no real negotiating requirement to give them more money. Obviously you may want to be fair and keep the, you know, the brackets of compensation in alignment. But I think if it was within a long period of evidence of a coherent player trading model, then it's okay. Well, maybe that makes sense, yeah. But I'm probably more skeptical because the evidence has been to the contrary.
Well, from my understanding of how player contracts work in professional football, and again, I'm no expert in it, but from my understanding, it is generally the case that a club will purchase the remaining time on the contract. So they will pay out for any remaining wages in the period of time they have left at the club. So even if that is just an extra, what is it? Let's say for Hatate, you're probably looking at an extra 25-30k per week over the course of an extra 2 years. Like, that is money that Celtic could be leaving on the table if they don't give them those extra couple of years on their contract. So, I mean, if they're not shifting them out this summer or next summer, I guess it sort of makes sense to at least have that on the books and have them signed down in case the offers don't come a knocking and eventually the asset, you know, devalues over time. But in terms of the player, Alan, not the asset, just one really serious question for you. Is Hatate good enough?
For what?
No, I'm messing. I think some of the narrative around Hatate has shifted slightly since the start of the season in terms of maybe his attitude, people are questioning, and maybe his quality, people are questioning. Over the course of the start of the season, I think he's been quite unlucky with his injuries, to be fair. It's been pretty hard for him to get up to any sort of fitness or momentum over the course. But, I mean, in football terms, do you think this is a good idea for Celtic or the right thing to do to offer Hatate a new deal?
Well, he's got 2.5 years left on his contract. And as James said, I'd have an issue with, obviously, listen, you protect your assets. Hatate's, you know, a first 11, more often than not, a first 11 player. You know, I think somebody said I think Strangelove, the doctor, says it increases the value of the asset and rewards them for success. That's I thought that was quite succinct and to the point, and I kind of get that. But like James, I'm not really understanding, and this has nothing to do with Itati or any other particular player. I'm not understanding what it is that we're trying to achieve as a strategy. Because, as you know, I think we should be turning players over quicker. I don't mean forcing them out the door, but, you know, coming back to Itati, like I said, if he is happy, he's doing a good job of suppressing that impression. But that, as I said last week, that might just be the kid's demeanour. I mean, who knows, right? We're all different. We all got different ways of expressing ourselves and so forth. So no harm to him. But, you know, joking aside, what are we actually trying to achieve? Because we do need to be increasing the volume and value of player sales. It's the only way we're going to grow. I know we've got squillions in the bank, which, and I know a lot of that is earmarked for capital projects. I get completely understand that. And it's wise not just to splaff it all on new players. It's wise to, you know, build what you've actually got and solidify what you've got. It probably all serves to gradually push up the wage bill, right? Which is useful in the sense of attracting new players. But you have to then back that up by continuing success on the field, because you need to maintain, you know, a wage is not for Christmas, it's for 3 or 4 or 5 years, right? So you've got to, you know, you pay for it for a long time and regret it if you don't have the money to do so, as others are finding out. So those are the dynamics of it. And putting all those things together, my simplistic, maybe oversimplistic probably, perspective is that we need to increase the volume value of sales, so that's the number of players sold and the value that we sell them for, to bring in more money, to gradually increase the wage bill, to attract incrementally better players, to be stronger and therefore get more success, specifically in Europe. Okay, and it's a slow process, it's not an overnight thing. It's you gradually build your capabilities up, and you know, you go from being a bottom of the group to third in the group, third in the group to last 16 or whatever. You get there in stages, but this is a sustainable way of doing it. So the contract renewals are all well and good, but where's that more aggressive, you know, higher end player trading model that Postecoglou spelt out very clearly in his very uncluttered way of his that Celtic needed to do? We're still not seeing that. And Rodgers is very much saying, well, that's not my job. I'll work with the players that I'm given. It's got to be somebody's job to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe I'm looking at it from too much of a top-line approach, but if you look at the players who Celtic have given contracts to, it's Callum McGregor, who was already the club's top earner, Kyogo, the team's best player, Maeda, who's an experienced international, then you have Abada, who's a future asset that Celtic will want to sell, Itati, who's likely in the same boat, Ralston is getting rewarded for being, you know, a product of the academy, who's very valuable to the club because of the European rules in UEFA, and then you're probably looking at Cameron Carter-Vickers as probably a player that you'd like to tie down to another deal. And what I see it as is that you are tying these really important players down to long-term deals so that you're not losing money on the future talents, and you're also rewarding the more experienced and more valuable members of the team. So then you have a strong core of 6-7 players within the squad who have long-term deals, and then they are basically the core members of the squad, and everyone else is sort of expendable beyond that point. Everyone else is upgradable beyond that point. So I think if you're able to get your core members up in your wage structure, that means you're going to be able to bring in more players. So instead of bringing in the younger players who are earning, you know, £2,000 to £5,000 a week, which is a lot of money to a normal person. It's not a lot of money in football. You're not getting very strong players for that amount of money. You're going to be able to bring in the 10 to 15 to the 15 to 20,000 a week players, which is an improvement on what Celtic currently have. So I do think it's probably slower than most people would want and probably not as aggressive as Celtic potentially could be. But if that, you know, 3 to 4 years down the line leads to us being a more steady and steadfast team in Europe who's always competing at Champions League level, at least in the group stages, then it's probably going to be worth it. But as a Celtic supporter, the history does not show that the club is capable of planning that far ahead. And it is generally a yo-yo system of bringing in good players, selling a couple, and then having to rebuild the entire squad after 3 to 4 years of a manager. So I completely see both sides of the coin in terms of the transfer structure. But in terms of Hatate, though, is he good enough, James?
I mean, he's good enough domestically, clearly. I'm still skeptical as a midfielder playing at Celtic in Europe that he brings enough to the table in his all-around game. I'm not sure that he is efficient enough with his creativity to offset his defensive and pressing deficiencies, or, you know, I'll be charitable and say mediocrities. I've talked to a few people. I mean, I still think that at that level, something like an inverted fullback could suit him in an attacking side where he's playing deeper and can use his pace and carrying of the ball. I'm not sure I see how he is a threat going forward in a sense of like a number 10, consistent enough at the European level, given those kind of defensive efficiencies. So I don't, you know, that's been my case the entire time. I haven't seen anything to really change that. So, you know, that's the other part of this is I don't see him as that cornerstone European player where, you know, if I was going to round up like Cameron Carter-Vickers, okay, yes. Like late Europa League. And that's really the threshold. I think Alan shares that view. That's kind of the aspirational, you know, we would routinely be in like the last 16 of the Europa League. Like, I think that's where we reasonably should be targeting as a club. So I think Carter-Vickers could be that type of player, all-around player at that level. And I think that's the type of player that we'd be striving for. And I remain skeptical that Hatate is.
Mm-hmm. So we'll move on to Celtic's general play, because I think it's been quite an interesting season so far, an inconsistent season so far, and lots of improvements since the start of the season where Celtic, let's face it, were just not very good. We touched on a couple of the issues, Alan, over the last couple of minutes in terms of what was going wrong. Ball retention didn't look like Celtic had much of a plan, but it seems to be starting to take shape a little bit now. They're not giving the ball away as much. There's some fluidity in the play. Players who weren't very good at the start of the season, they're starting to play into themselves a bit now. There's still obviously a few bits to iron out, and I do think there is a little bit of an issue with Kyogo's role, especially in Europe. Seems to be isolating him a bit, but there's some definite positives from the season. So as is not the norm on this show, let's talk about some of the positives with Celtic's play over the course of the season. I guess Matt O'Reilly is probably the jumping off point, right? So like his role is different this year and it is definitely getting the best out of him.
Yeah, and he's definitely the profile of the kind of midfielder that Celtic need to be successful in Europe. And, you know, where he has been particularly impressive in the last three games away from home, so the game at Ibrox, the game in Rotterdam, and the game at the weekend at Livingston. So all of three of those games were difficult for different reasons. What you saw with O'Reilly is generally defensive excellence, and also choosing his moments when to attack. So that decision-making of when to break into the box, but also you're getting a high volume and a high efficiency of defensive actions. You're seeing him in the box, you're seeing him getting on the end of chances. And that turning it really turning into a genuine all-round midfielder, which is a rare commodity indeed. Let's face it, he's never going to have that high-end pace, but he has got a bit of physicality about him. You know, he is sort of 6 foot. He is these bloody great feet of his that he manages to get in the way and nick the ball from people. He's strong enough, and technically he's excellent. So, but most importantly, it's his cognitive abilities, which seem to be fantastic at playing football, certainly. So, he's definitely been the standout in terms of players that are really pushed forward quite a lot. But actually, to me, the start, I mentioned those three difficult away games, Ibrox, Livingston. The star of the show in those three games was our highest paid employee, which is the manager. In each of those games, he's set up well initially, the team, and he's managed the game very well, the games very well. At Ibrox, I think we did conclude, James and I, much as we didn't want to, that really it was 80% down to Mickey Beale's incompetence and 20% Rodgers. But when they finally sorted themselves out a little bit and started moving the ball a bit quicker and had to be a bit more aggressive in that second half, what Rodgers did in terms of his little bit of magic dust that he put on proceedings was to keep the forwards high and wide and keep three up front. And he really did that should have, with more efficient forwards, we should have probably nicked a couple of goals in the second half. A good European team, you'd have been walking away with a 3-0 win, probably a 2-0 mm-hmm. win from that game. Against Rotterdam, against Feyenoord, we talked about the original setup. We were nice and compact. We were staying together as a team. I know there wasn't the attacking cohesion, but we limited them to virtually nothing in attack, bar a few long shots at goal and a few hopeful crosses into the box. And, what can you do when you go down to nine players? It's an impossible situation. And then at the weekend, again, he had to adjust to adversity when the goalkeeper gets sent off after 28 minutes. And again, as I say, what he did was he stayed bold. He moved Maeda and Kyogo. He kept two up front, but he kept them wide, knowing that they were going to be able to occupy the whole of the back four players at that time. He pushed Greg Taylor. He kept Greg Taylor more or less as a left-sided midfielder, squeezed Alistair Johnson in a little bit, kept it nice and positive, and Celtic pretty much dominated the second half, actually. They did create a few chances. Their quality was poor. A better team might have punished Celtic, to be honest with you. I think so. Rodgers, I think, has added value in all the games, and for me, he's been the sort of man of the matches, if you like, in those three big away games. But that's not to say that in each of these games we've conceded over 1xG, well over 1xG, and we're continuing to cough up chances, and we're well under goals xG, and you've got to think at some point we were going to suffer for that. But you have to take the context of playing two out of eight games with a depleted team. You got to take into context the centre half situation, because as much as we all love Liam Scales, and he has been admirable. The reality is Lager Bielke is getting punished for his errors, and Scales isn't. That is the reality of it. Scales, he is making mistakes. He's not getting punished for them. He's doing a good, steady job. Lager Bielke's horrible moments and not getting away with them. We seem to have quite a few in each game. It's a very centre-half pairing. Joe Hart has cost us in Rotterdam, almost cost us in Livingston. I think we've got away with it so far in terms of just XG, shots, chances, etc. I don't know that we will continue to do so, but we will get stronger. Obviously, as more experienced, better defenders come back, and I think we will get stronger.
Now, I will say that one thing that has bothered me, but more because I don't know if it's a tactic or if it's just him as a player, Liam Scales has been very aggressive in terms of attacking balls, following players into the midfield, coming out of position to go after the ball. And I do not know whether that's a specific order from Brendan Rodgers or if that's just Lemsky is going to get bit rogue. And it's not something that I'm going to be able to defend for much longer unless I know that he's being told to do that by Brendan Rodgers. But
it doesn't do like his game, let's be honest with you. I mean, it's early days, but, you know, I don't want to burst your balloon or anything, Ender, but I've got a framework for evaluating centre halves, and his defensive action success rate is 70%. He loses quite a lot of headers for such a big guy. And like you say, he's been very aggressive, and by aggressive we mean, yes, you know, on the front foot, which is good. Starfelt was like that, but it has its downside. It means you get caught under the ball, you get caught out of position. And his defensive numbers, you know, are, if you're looking at like a Carter Vickers, you're looking at so 80% defensive action success rate, scales of 70%. Possession one through defensive actions, you're looking at 85 plus, scales of 73. I mean, those are going to be, it's a very small sample. You know, he may bring that up, but that's right at the bottom right hand corner of centre halves, I'm afraid to say.
Well, I still think he starts over Lagerbielke. I'm just going to say that. If there's one of them going to be dropped, it's going to be Lagerbielke. But James, look, we spoke about the difference between Rodgers and Ange before the start of the season. And one of the key factors that you certainly didn't like about Ange at the time was his inability to, or his not his inability, but his unwillingness to change the system to suit the game and to adjust to the opposition. He was very forthright in the way that he played in Europe. Brendan Rodgers is not that. He has changed things. He's changed the shape for Europe. He's changed the style of play for Livingston. He was able to adjust for the 10 men, where Ange would have essentially just said, okay, let's just continue to bombard them in the same way. He got success that way. He won a treble. He won two league titles in a row. There is success in the way that Ange approached things. But I guess when you look at the Feyenoord game, down to 9 men, although Celtic did concede 4 goals in that game, it did end 2-0, and it was a different type of performance that Celtic have put in Europe. So, I mean, we are seeing sort of the fruits of the different various managers that we've had over the last couple of years now.
Without a doubt. And I think that that's the encouraging part of, as Alan talked about, is I think we have 3 most valuable components so far this season. One is Rodgers. I agree with Alan on that. I'd probably say Matt O'Reilly is number 2 in the totality of his game and how good he's been. Kyogo's been very good, but you know, he's not as 3-dimensional as far as the phases of play because of his position. And the third one is opposition finishing has been dreadful. We actually have that in statistical evidence of that. So between those, you know, two of those are, you know, one you can't really control directly. And the other one I think is encouraging relative to Europe, but I kind of think it's a push or maybe a slight negative domestically. And I think that's because the way Ange played was so suffocating against the domestic opposition. And I think Rodgers, despite his ability and willingness to adjust, that's not foolproof. I mean, that sometimes you adjust and you don't improve things, you maybe get things worse. So, I mean, I think generally he's good at it, but, you know, I think it's unreasonable that people are going to have perfection in that regard. And I just think from a style of play perspective, you know, we saw it during his first tenure outside of the first season, which, again, there was some variant, positive variance there as far as, you know, risks of dropping points. And I think that's last season was fortunate because opposition keepers were dreadful in a disproportionately insane way against us. This year, that's reverted back. So we were actually getting some decent keeper play against us. The pendulum has swung in the other way now, which is opposition teams are not finishing at all. Will that persist for a whole season like it did last season, abnormally relative to opposition keepers? That would be wonderful given the state that Joe Hart appears to be in, but probably not, you know, realistic. So we're going to need everything out of Rodgers given the level of recruitment that we've had and the injuries, I think, in order to, you know, to get to where I think collectively we want to get domestically, which at this point is the double. So we're going to need Rodgers continuing to be that kind of most valuable component if we're going to get there.
Yeah. Well, he seems to be getting a bit of his swagger back, which is nice to see. He's a little bit more fiery in the press conferences rather than the sort of down in the dumps that he seemed to be the first couple of weeks. So that's always nice to see. I genuinely nearly burst out laughing in the middle of your answer there. And it wasn't because of you. There's a comment. For some reason, there's been a few comments in the YouTube tonight of guys talking about their dogs and what kind of dogs they have. And Sean the Mac comment saying, the next door neighbors have a one-legged German Shepherd called Vape. Every so often, they take him out for a drag. So that's the level of humor that makes this gets a good laugh out of me. So that I wasn't laughing at you; I was laughing at that comment. So, I think that's where we'll end the show for this evening. That's as good a place as any, to be honest. Storm Agnes rages outside the window here, Alan. I hope it's not too bad over where you are.
I think we're okay. I think we're okay under the whoosh of wind. The speed of Liam Scales running and training doesn't quite reach us this far south.
Well, I'm just off to actually just do the latest bit of PR for him over the next couple of days to make sure he stays in the Celtic starting lineup for the foreseeable, despite potentially a few people being back from injury in the next couple of weeks. So I think, you know, I think we can keep them there. You know, a couple of big games coming up, but I think we can manage it. If you are interested, by the way, Celtic's opposition in Europe next week, Lazio, are currently in action and they are winning 1-0 away at Torino. I guess it puts everybody at ease to see Atletico Madrid beat Real Madrid in the Madrid derby at the start of the week. So yeah, that's definitely made me feel comfortable about playing them in a couple of weeks' time.
The other thing I would say is don't overlook Motherwell. I think Motherwell's played pretty well this season. You know, historically they have not been as bunkering as they could be, particularly the away fixture for Celtic. So, but yeah, they've been pretty decent so far this season, and they actually have a recruitment team, and you know, given their resources, have done a pretty decent job in running that club. So, Saturday, I think it's Saturday. Yeah.
You wouldn't know given the complete blanket lack of coverage of any Scottish football this weekend. You know,
no.
There'll be about 1,000 Celtic fans that see the game. It's ludicrous.
Elsewhere, there is Scottish football in action tonight in the League Cup in the playoffs. And if you want to see why Alan persists with his Honest Mistakes articles on Celtic by numbers, just go and look at Rangers' first goal against Livingston there, because it's a fucking disgrace, to be honest.
all they're doing is keeping wee Mickey in a job, so we've got to be grateful about that.
That's true. All right, that is where we will park the live stream for this evening. Alan, James, thanks very much, and thanks to everybody who is commenting on the YouTube. If you are commenting but you're not subscribing, do hit subscribe. And if you want to get the podcast, it'll be uploaded shortly after this. So you can get that wherever you get your podcasts. And we shall chat to you all later. Good luck.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.